Kam Yena, Kas Mai, Shi Urve Namaha. So, of course, previously there was this poem we read when Prabhupada was on the boat. We'll read this poem too. This is Prayer to the Lotus Feet of Lord Krishna by Srila Prabhupada on board the ship Jaladut, and that was written on September 13th, 1965. So this is sort of revealing Srila Prabhupada's determination. Actually, there's many poems that Prabhupada wrote. There's another poem. Anyway, I'm not going to read that one. My favorite poem is actually the poem called Vrindavan Bhajan. Anyone's heard that poem before? Yes. And that's the poem. Yeah, you've heard it several times. That's the poem where Prabhupada is talking about, first of all, his renunciation, how Krishna's really taken away everything from him. In light of that verse, Yashaham anagrinami hurishe tadanam shanai, that for those who I especially favor, I take away everything. So Prabhupada starts that poem saying, you know, I have my family, I have this person, that person, but they're all fruitless glory. Why? And Prabhupada says, because I have no money. In other words, they're not interested in him anymore. So Prabhupada's realized, of course he's always realized, but he's exhibiting the position of someone who's realized the futility of mundane society, friendship, and love. Because mundane society, friendship, and love is actually based upon what the other person can do for you, not what you can do for the other person. So it's... And if the situation changes, the loving exchange can turn into sort of a repulsive or even a hateful sort of relationship. There was one interesting book written. Boy, I can talk about this forever. But anyway, there was one interesting book written. Many of you, or some of you may have read this book, is a book written by Francis Kafka. It's called The Metamorphosis. I think I mentioned that to you. You read the book, right? And it's a very interesting book. It was about a young man whose family loved him very much. And he had some unfortunate circumstance occur, which was a change of body. What happened is he woke up one morning and he was a big cockroach. I mean, it's an interesting book because it illustrates the futility of mundane society, friendship, and love. So anyway, so he woke up one morning and he was this giant cockroach. You know what a cockroach is? Do you have them here in Australia? I think they're worldwide, you know. They're migrants who have made their way around the world. So this cockroach, as the cockroach, he was lying in his bed. He was lying on his back. And what happens with a cockroach is lying on his back? Does anyone know? He can't turn around. So he's lying on his back, and I think his sister walks in the room, and she sees this giant cockroach. And she gets ready, you know, screaming. And he says, "It's me." Whatever her name was, Susie or something. Like, "It's me." And she looks, and, you know, he starts to talk. And they understand it's him. But after a while, they get so disgusted with him. And he's the same person. That they just let him die. And the poor guy dies. The cockroach dies because his family neglects him. Of course, that's very similar to the story that Prabhupada told about the man who was very attached to his family, left all of his money to his family, died, and became a cobbler in the same village. I think you all know that story. And then later on, that same family, because he had a change of bodies, just beat him with his own shoes when they were buying shoes from his store. So this is the nature of mundane love. You know, you change your body, and love turns to hate, you know, it turns to hate or something worse. And actually our affection in this material world, I'm not talking about devotees' affection, devotees should naturally love each other, is based to a large extent on this body. For example, people like to keep pets sometimes, right? We were talking about this today. How many of the grahasas are confronted with the fact that their children really want a puppy? And so I was thinking about this. So, because it's based on the body. Let's say instead of giving them a puppy, you gave them a pet, let's say anteater or a porcupine or something like that.
Echidna.
What? Oh, what?
Echidna.
What's an echidna?
It's kind of like a porcupine, but it's got snout and it's got spikes.
It's a pretty ugly creature. Or you gave them, in America we have this thing called a skunk. You don't have them here, I don't think. And they smell so bad that if it sprays you, like for 3 weeks, you can't do anything else. You can't wash it off yourself. What's that? Yeah. So, I was just thinking, you know, you give your child one, you say, here's your pet. And so the child said, no, that's not what I want. I want something that's furry that I can enjoy. So that's really, you know, the loving thing. You know, I love my pet, I love my dog. And, you know, that's material love right there. So actually I was thinking of a solution to the children. This is interesting. You would like this, Ajita. There was a solution to children who want pets. I told some of the parents today, who shall remain nameless, Krishnarupa. But anyway, so I told Krishnarupa, yes, the children or the parents can adopt a cow at the farm and, you know, pay for it and everything like that. And that could be considered their pet, and the children can go there and, you know, pet and comb the cow and everything, like brush the cow and everything like that. And that would fulfill their need for having a pet. But anyway, so we're talking about mundane love. So in this particular poem, Prabhupada was saying that, you know, I have all these people, but they are fruitless glory because I have no money. And then Prabhupada was lamenting. He was saying, I'm sitting here, you know, thinking about these things, but he says it gives me a good laugh, which is quite interesting, you know, a good laugh. Why would you laugh in such a circumstance? Because you come to this realization of what this material world is like. I said, wow, I was striving for all that. And of course, this is a pastime. I'm not saying Prabhupada was ever materially attached or anything like that. But Prabhupada was really taking our position in this material world. So Prabhupada's poems, which he wrote quite a few of, are actually very instructive for us insofar as delving into his, let's say his desire to please his spiritual master, showing us by example the different stages of devotion. So even Bhaktivinoda Thakur does the same thing in his poems. I mean, you have this whole series of poems, Sharanagati, where he actually displays the attitude that we should have when surrendering to the Supreme Personality of God. It's quite interesting. So I love the poems of Prabhupada. So anyway, so getting on to, let's read this poem first, Prayer of the Lotus Feet of Krishna, by Srila Prabhupada. So, I empathically say to you, O brothers, you will attain your good fortune from the Supreme Lord only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you. So here Prabhupada is really displaying his position, his ontological position, as being like a servant of Srimati Radharani. And this very much relates to the story in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where you have Gopakumar, once he becomes Sarupya and gets his spiritual identity, is actually sent to the material world to preach. Everybody knows this book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita? So Gopakumar goes through all these different stages. Eventually he realizes he's a coward boy in Vrindavan. And then after he realizes he's a coward boy in Vrindavan, you would think that he just wants to stay there and enjoy life. You know, why would you want to come to this horrible place? I mean, this is a nice place here. I mean, there's one farm community, New Govardhan. This is probably the nicest place in the whole material world. It's like paradise. Ajita told me to say that. So, I mean, everywhere else is like hell. I'm saying that to the devotees. I mean, they've actually moved to paradise here. It's quite amazing. So, you know, why would you want to come back to this material world where, you know, birth, death, disease, and old age? So, this Gopakumar gets his spiritual identity. He's called the cowboy Sarupa. And the next thing you hear about in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is he meets with Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani says, you got to go to the material world. In other words, you have to go down to Braj in the material world, which is actually the same as Braj in the spiritual world in any case. But you have to go there and preached to this devotee of mine, the Mathura Brahmin. There's a Mathura Brahmin. And it's interesting, this Mathura Brahmin, he actually originally started worshipping Durga, who happens to be an expansion of Srimati Radharani, but still he got Radharani's mercy. Very interesting story. So, in any case, so Sarupa goes down to the Mathura world, liberates the Mathura Brahmin, and actually he's so merciful that even after he tells his whole story, the Mathura Brahmin didn't quite achieve the perfectional stage, so he just like touches him. It's interesting, by the touch of a pure devotee, you can become Krishna conscious. Pretty interesting. So Srila Prabhupada's position is the same, that he was actually told, and he revealed this to the devotees by Krishna and Srimati Radharani, to come down to this material world to preach. And Prabhupada, of course, this famous story, Prabhupada said first, he said, why should I come to such a place? You know, me go there? But Krishna insisted you have to go down to write some spiritual literatures. So Prabhupada is revealing that position that he's... And of course, his father did pray that Krishna would send or Srimati Radharani would send her servant down to be his son. So the next verse is, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is very dear to Lord Gauranga, the son of Mother Sachi, is unparalleled in his service to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. He is that great saintly spiritual master who bestows intense devotion to Krishna at different places throughout the world. By his strong desire, and so here Prabhupada is exhibiting his humility and his dedication to the order of his spiritual master, two very important qualities. Actually, the order to preach in the Western world was given to many of Prabhupada's godbrothers, at least those who could speak English, but Prabhupada was the one who took it seriously, most seriously. So it's not that Prabhupada was the only one who got that order. So by his strong desire, and he's completely convinced of the success of his mission. He's completely convinced, according to the Acharyas, that the success potency is built into the order of the spiritual master. His strong desire, the holy name of Lord Gauranga, will spread throughout all the countries of the Western world. In all the cities, towns, and villages on the earth, from all the oceans, seas, rivers, and streams, everyone will chant the holy name of Krishna. As the vast mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu conquers all directions, a flood of transcendental ecstasy will certainly cover the land when all the sinful, miserable living entities become happy. The Vaishnava's desire is then fulfilled. So, you know, this is also Prabhupada's desire. Although my Guru Maharaj ordered me to accomplish this mission, I am not worthy or fit to do it. I am very fallen and insignificant. Therefore, O Lord, now I am begging for your mercy so that I may become worthy, for you are the wisest and most experienced of all. If you bestow your power by serving the spiritual master, one attains the absolute truth. One's life becomes successful. If that service is obtained, then one becomes happy and gets your association due to good fortune. Also, going back into Prabhupada's Vrindavan Bhajan, Prabhupada said, if you want to see or get the darshan of Radha and Krishna, then the method is actually preaching Krishna consciousness, not just sitting down and becoming a bhajananandi. Prabhupada actually, in a very heavy fashion, says that those who are just sitting down think they're going to become Krishna conscious are eating the mind's bananas. That's Prabhupada's expression. In other words, they're crazy. You know, when you say that someone's crazy, I don't know if you have that expression here, you say someone is bananas. That means they're completely crazy. And then Prabhupada goes on to lambast, in other words, criticize those who are just simply residing in the holy place trying to become Krishna conscious, and said that the method of this in this day and age is to actually Harinam Sankirtan, to preach to people, bring people to Krishna consciousness. We'll continue here. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my associate, this of course is a quote from Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, because of my association with material desires one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes following the general populace. But your servant Narada Muni kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? In other words, Prabhupada is saying his first duty is to actually serve his spiritual master, just like Prahlad Maharaj is telling God. You know, it's interesting. Prahlad Maharaj is saying to God, who is Lord Srinagadeva in that particular point, that my first duty is to serve God, my spiritual master. It's like preaching to God. Just think of the scenario. You know, God appears. You know, what would you do if Krishna appeared in front of you? I'd probably faint. I'd probably ask him for some money or something like that. But anyway, I mean, I can think of a million and one things we'd do if Krishna appeared before us. But how many of us would say to Krishna, when Krishna said, what do you want? Like Lord Nrsimhadeva said to Prahlad Maharaj, how many of us would actually say, my first duty is to serve my spiritual master? Wow, to God. Just envision this whole scenario. To God, my first duty is to serve my spiritual master. Wow. And that's Prabhupada's dedication. And of course, Prabhupada was taking his inspiration from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this famous verse in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayatmaka Budhireke Hakura Nandana, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur brings this point forward in his commentary that actually this is what Akha Kura Nandana means, being one focused in serving the Guru. And Prabhupada continues, O Lord Krishna, you are my eternal companion. Forgetting you, I have suffered the kicks of Maya birth after birth. If today the chance to meet you occurs again, then I will surely be able to rejoin you. O dear friend, in your company, I will experience great joy once again. In the early morning, I will wander about the cowherd pastures and fields, running and frolicking in the many forests of Braj. I will roll on the ground in spiritual ecstasy. Oh, when will that day be mine? Very much reminiscent of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's poem, Kabhi Habi, Bolo Se Dinamar. When, oh, when will that day be mine? Today, that remembrance of you came to me in a very nice way, because I have a great longing. I call to you. I am your eternal servant, and therefore I desire your association so much. O Lord Krishna, except for you, there is no other means of success. And then we'll go on to this poem that Prabhupada wrote today, 50 years ago. Markanei Bhagavat Dharma. My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me. But I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? You know, terrible place means the Western world. You know, most of us think, sometimes when we go to India, we think, why did you bring me to this terrible place? You know, you see so much traffic and everything like that. Of course, not Vrindavan, I mean Delhi or somewhere. Why, Krishna, did you bring me to this terrible place? I want to go back to home, back to the West. So, and remember, in Vrindavan, Prabhupada had practically no facility. I mean, Prabhupada had to go to the fields to evacuate and take a shower and everything like that. Prabhupada was living in the Radha Damodar temple, living very, very simply. There was hot during the summer. It's 50 degrees during the summer in Vrindavan, and so cold in the winter, it's bone-chilling cold. Yet Prabhupada considered Boston, the United States, to be a terrible place. Now you can do whatever you like with me. Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of passion and ignorance. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva. I do not know how they will be able to understand it, but I know by your causeless mercy, everything can be made possible because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? O Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have come under the control of the illusory energy by your will, and therefore, if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. I wish that you may deliver them. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand your message. The words of Srimad Bhagavatam are your incarnation, and if a sober person repeatedly receives it with submissive oral reception, then he will be able to understand your message. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and here Prabhupada quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, second chapter, text, I think 17 to 21. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma Supersoul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. By regular attendance in classes in the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. He will be liberated from the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus all inauspicious things accumulated in the core of the heart will disappear. Of course, this is Prabhupada's language right now. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message, so if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel gladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance. O Lord, make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta, and now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Sign the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladuta, Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, USA, dated 18th of September, 1965. Anyway, they arrived the 17th, and the 18th, I guess, he wrote this poem. So, any questions or comments about these things, about Prabhupada's arrival in the West? And we're all here today because of Prabhupada's coming. Had Prabhupada not come, then God knows what we would be doing, probably in our next body. Anyway, so today we're celebrating. So, any questions? Yes. Yes.
No, Srila Prabhupada had a very strong preaching mood.
Yeah.
And you did mention before that how, what a wonderful thing it is to preach.
Yeah.
It's very advantageous and it's something that you should do. And I find that devotees mainly, we have so many things to do, and especially younger devotees, they have families and jobs. And I mean, I feel I'd like to preach more. I mean, I just went away recently to a Queensland town up north, a big town, and spent a few weeks there preaching, which was wonderful.
Wow.
So, And I thought, you know, let me get out and do some preaching. So I thought maybe we could talk about that a little bit. The things that we could do, even if they're just little things that we can do, even though we're tied up in grihastha life or whatever our, you know, we have to do in life, how we can feel some satisfaction that at least I'm doing something, I'm doing some preaching.
Well, I think if we strain our minds, we can figure out some way, just like we were talking to Krishnarupa today, and she was talking about how she has plans to preach on the internet. You know, even though she's home with 20 children, then it seems like that, actually. You know, from a sannyasi standpoint, when they're all around, it's just, oh my God, how many of them are there? So, even though she's home, she's making plans in her mind how to reach out and preach. And of course, Rupa, he's out there all the time preaching. So, and so one could be at home preaching over the internet or preaching on the phone or calling people. Preaching, let's say, I don't even like that word preaching. Let's say sharing Krishna consciousness. I like that much better because, you know, preaching is sort of pejorative. It has sort of like a negative connotation. And I picture like a Christian up there in a soapbox yelling and screaming at you. So, you know, share. You know, you can even sponsor book distribution. You can bring people here to the community. You can distribute prasadam. And there's all sorts of things you can do. Like Prabhupada said, that if someone takes prasadam, they'll one day become a devotee. So, I mean, just even just distributing prasadam. So, I was looking for this Vrindavan Bhajan, which I like, because Vrindavan Bhajan actually stresses preaching. Let's see, Vrindavan Bhajan. If I can find it. It's actually my favorite poem. Oh, here's a comment on it. Oh, here it is. I found it. What?
I was just saying I had another idea about sharing Krishna. Okay. That was an easy thing that Grihastas may be able to do.
Which is?
Well, I just seen lately at Kulangana, along the beach or along the walk, the promenade, you know, along the walk, the esplanade, that Jehovah's Witnesses, I've been there most Saturday mornings, and what they have is just a small stand. It just stands up, and it's got wheels, they must wheel it from the car, and it's just got like 10 of their books, and the people aren't standing there giving out the books, they're just sitting, and I thought, well, say for example, a Grihastha family could be in the park playing with the children, whatever, but they just have the stand there, the books are there, and someone might not even take the books, but every time they walk past, they see, oh, Hare Krishna, they see some of the books, and if they do have any questions or anyone does stop, then, you know, that Grihastha can be playing with the kids in the park and say, oh, I'm going to talk to this person for 2 minutes. So even though they may not be actively working on the street constantly, they could, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at me as though, okay, go and do it, Krishna Rupa.
No, these are all great. There's millions of great ideas. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one, I had a woman, she was walking along. I was just going for a walk in the evening by the beach, and she was walking too. And she just said, can I give you this? As she walked past, she said, hello, can I give you this? And kept walking. It was just a card that said, you know, www.mormon.org, Jesus loves you, something like that.
Yeah.
Questions, look up online. And she didn't stop, she didn't interrupt her normal activities. So she just handed it to me and kept going. And I thought, well, that was glorification of the Lord. You know, that was nice. Strain her and strain me.
Yeah, there's so many things you can do.
Sorry.
No. I mean, I'm open to suggestions. Yeah.
Just another follow-up to my question. Thinking about, you do get in a sort of a rut about me and my deliverance and my liberation and my Krishna consciousness. And, you know, like people who just go to a secluded place and I think about themselves. I mean, but is that something you have to be too concerned about? Oh, I must wait until I've made some development in Krishna consciousness, then I can preach. Or it's something that we can do straight away, even it doesn't matter what level we're on.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
Instead of just considering my Krishna consciousness, you know, I don't want to fall into that trap, which I do. But, you know, to be giving, I think it's very beneficial.
Well, in that way you get more Krishna consciousness. Like, Krishna consciousness is such a wonderful thing that the more you give, the more you get.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I've been looking for this copy of this Vrindavan Bhajan so I can actually read what Prabhupada said. And it's really amazing. He brings out this point very succinctly in this Vrindavan Bhajan. Yeah.
I was wondering if Prabhupada had any idea at all of where he was going or what he was going to do when he got off the ship in Boston.
He just looked around and he went to Traveler's Aid, which... And he just said, where should I go? And then it was arranged that, of course, he would go to Butler, Pennsylvania, because his sponsor was Gopal Agarwal, who was, living in Butler, Pennsylvania. And he stayed there for a few days. But Prabhupada knew he was going to Butler, Pennsylvania. But he just didn't know. I mean, even he didn't know a lot of things about America. I mean...
As I heard when he didn't know whether to go left or right.
That's right.
I don't understand,
Does that mean
he got off and just didn't know where he was going to go?
He didn't know which direction was the travelers, who would help him. Oh, nobody was there to receive him.
Oh, okay.
You come to a strange country. I mean, if I arrive in a strange country, because I've traveled all over, no country's strange anymore. But let's say the first time I arrived in India, I didn't know whether to turn right or left or just get back on the plane. So...
He didn't have any money. It's like he can go on a taxi.
Yeah, he didn't have any money. I mean, it's not the problem.
Such and such hotel.
Yeah, Prabhupada just didn't know where to go. He knew he was going to Butler, Pennsylvania, that's for sure. But he just didn't know, how nobody was there to receive him. So he went to Traveler's Aid, and then Traveler's Aid said, I guess there was some arrangement for the bus ticket. And then Prabhupada took a bus to Butler, Pennsylvania.
I remember hearing a lecture where Prabhupada was saying he was a new man, he didn't understand the bus rules and regulations.
Yeah, I mean, and Prabhupada also, the first time he saw snow in New York, he thought someone had taken white paint and painted the whole building, all the buildings and the streets and everything like that. There's a lot of things that Prabhupada in that pastime was unfamiliar with. And in other words, he was going somewhere without anybody to take care of, without any money, just on the order of his spiritual master. I mean, such faith. Of course, Lord Chaitanya talks about this in his surrendering principles, which Prabhupada elaborates on, and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and also Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, first two surrendering principles, to believe... accept everything favorable for devotional, so reject everything unfavorable, and then to always understand the Lord is protecting you and maintaining you. Those are the third and fourth principles. And the other ones are even harder. To always be meek and humble, that's the hardest one. And to have no separate interests other than the interests of the Lord. So Prabhupada was displaying that surrender. I mean, how many of us, just like when I go to a country and I keep traveling, I don't travel with no resources. I mean, I have credit cards. In case the devotees don't pick me up at the airport, I have a SIM chip in the card and the phone so I can call the devotees in case they don't come. That's what happened actually when I arrived in Brisbane. Nobody was there in the airport. So I get on the phone to Kishore. He says, what the hell's happening here? Just like a spoiled brat. What the hell's happening here? I'm here, and nobody's received me. This is a great offense against a pure devotee. No, I didn't say that. I mean, obviously. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But, so we'd be very insecure. And, and I'm younger than Prabhupada was when he arrived in America. And I'm just seeing as I get older how difficult it is to go to a place without any amenities or people to pick you up or people to show you where you're supposed to go. I mean, it's like I come here and I'm treated very nicely. I have nice two houses. I actually have flats here. You have to see spoiled sannyasi. I can choose one of the two houses, Sringananda's house. It's not Kishore, it's Sringananda's house. Rupa Raghunath's house, and I couldn't imagine coming here unless I had my own flat to see how spoiled I am. And so, but Prabhupada went, and there's no flat, and he had to live with people who were eating meat. And No money, no flight, no nothing.
He left that child, the child, can't remember the child's name.
Yeah.
In Butler, the
rich. Yeah, the little baby. Yeah, so Prabhupada, I mean, showed his determination and his dependence on Krishna. You know, Krishna's going to take care of me. I mean, it's easy to do when you're young. I remember when I was young, many years ago, that I went to, you know, I started some temples and I was left, I had the devotees just leave me in some college campus somewhere with two boxes of books. I thought this is very romantic. And I was making devotees, I started center, and you know, it was ecstatic. It was in a place called Stillwater, Oklahoma. There's not a center there now. But I thought this was a great adventure. But to do that at my age, no way. As I say, no way, Jose. But Prabhupada did that. Faith in the spiritual master. Yasha Devi Parabhakti Yata Devi Tata Guru Tashaite Katitari Artha Prakashante Mahabana. One who has the faith in the spiritual master and faith in the words of the Vedic literatures, everything gets revealed to him. That's the statement of Bhagavatam. You know, everything becomes revealed and one has that implicit faith. So that's what we can learn from Prabhupada, these poems of Prabhupada. He had this implicit, complete faith in the words of his spiritual master and the Vedic literatures. You know, our faith is sorely lacking. Not only in that, but Prabhupada even said one time, how many of you actually believe that Krishna is God? I mean, fully, 100%. How many of you believe that when you go to the altar, you're actually directly before the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Just like I told the devotee today, if you want something, there's Giriraj. Just ask him, he'll give it. Not everything you ask for. You know. But, you know, he's there. He's God. We're dealing directly with God. How many of us completely agree with that? I mean, completely have the faith in that? Isn't it? I mean, it takes a lot of faith.
How do you get that faith, that strong?
That's an interesting question. There's several ways. One way is by you continue in Krishna consciousness, you get realization, prachaksha bhagavam dharmam, shushukam kartamavyam, by the experience. Like Prabhupada said, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And one way that's very powerful is that we associate with those who have that faith. And of course, right now we're associating by hearing Prabhupada's poem. So our faith is increasing by associating with Prabhupada. So association is not just like skin, you know, in the same physical location, hanging out with someone. But association is to hear from someone who has that complete faith. And then the faith, you know, Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata, Tajoshana Dasho Pavargavartmani Shraddha Ritira Bhakti Anukramishati. That's a verse from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Lord Kapiladev states that when one associates with devotees and hears Krishna Kata, then the Krishna Kata goes from the ear to the heart. There's a channel between the ear and the heart. And then Shraddha, faith develops, and then after faith comes Ratir, taste, and ultimately bhakti, anukramishati. They follow one after the other. So that's the method. You know, you hear from Chushusho, Shraddhanasya, Vasudeva Gataruchi, Shadmahatsai. I mean, so many verses I can quote in this regard. If you hear and associate with those who have faith, then that faith rubs off, or the bhakti rubs off. Because faith is a necessary constituent of bhakti. Without faith, in other words, the faith that if you simply follow the order of Krishna and the spiritual master, everything is accomplished, there's no bhakti. It's necessary. In other words, without it, you don't have bhakti. And no matter how much you cry and roll on the ground and become a babaji or whatever, but without that faith in Krishna's pure devotee in the Vedic literatures, it's not bhakti. It's just an emotional expression. You know, we can have so many emotional expressions. Like I deal with people all the time who have emotional expressions towards Krishna. But then when they're asked to do something, or to the spiritual master, they say, "Oh, Guru Maharaj, you're my life and soul. Oh, I love you. Okay, can you do this?" No, Guru Maharaj. You know, that's generally the response. So, anyway, so that's how we gain that faith. I think by association more than any other way. Yeah. Like,
when you recited Prabhupada's poem, when you said that you will not be able to attain Krishna unless Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you, in what way do we, or do I, on my level, how do you actually satisfy Srimati Radharani?
Well, Srimati Radharani has a representative, and that's the spiritual master's representative, Srimati Radharani and Lord Nityananda, simultaneously. And so we satisfy Krishna's representative. Of course, in ISKCON, that means Prabhupada, for all of us, you know, that if we simply think of satisfying, so what will satisfy Prabhupada, you know, if you ask, what will satisfy Prabhupada more than anything else? I was thinking about that today. That what will satisfy, of course, Prabhupada did say, you know, cooperation. That's one thing. But I think cooperation can also, in one sense, be external. It has to be more like loving relationships between the devotees, or the love between the devotees. Not just the external manifestation of cooperation. You know, I'm going to work with you and do, you know, we'll work together and do something. But actually to have love for the other devotees. All the other devotees. And I talked about that in Bhagavatam class the other day. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur felt so much compassion, and that's love, not just some emotional feeling, but so much compassion for this one person who was actually crazy and the devotees had kicked out of the temple, that he was ready just to stop the deity installation and you know, this whole temple opening because of that. In other words, that comes from overflowing compassion, like we're chanting Vajrakalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhu. That means an ocean of compassion, ocean of mercy. So, Haribo, there's my hiking companion. He carried me down. Oh, I carried him, anyway. So, we had a good time. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, actually.
Not sore or anything? Or
very invigorated.
Yeah, it's very invigorated. So, you know, really, if we talk about pleasing Prabhupada, you know, having love for all the living, all the devotees, and of course, ultimately, all the living entities, and acting in accordance with that compassion. Not, you know, if we think about what would displease Prabhupada the most, I think it's the fighting between the devotees. You know, criticism of other Vaishnavas, or you know, fighting, not cooperation with other devotees. I think that would displease Prabhupada the most. What would please Prabhupada the most is the loving exchanges between Vaishnavas. And Prabhupada actually stated in the purport to this, to the verse of the Upadesamrita, Dadati Pratigranati Guyamakyati Prichati, that our movement expands based upon these loving exchanges. You know, people will join our movement and stay if we have very good loving exchanges. I mean, sometimes I give the example of the Mormon Church. And the Mormon Church, their philosophy is not so wonderful. I mean, I guess for some people, you know, you can become the lord of your own universe is kind of attractive. With your family, with your pet dog and everything like that. I mean, I guess that's something that would attract a lot of people. But what keeps people in that particular religion is they have this very strong social system where they support each other. You know, whether it's emotionally, or they send the kids to, they arrange for the kids' marriages, going to school, the welfare. Nobody, you know, nobody starves amongst the Mormons. I mean, the Mormons are so hospitable and compassionate. They even help Hare Krishna devotees build temples. You know, they gave major donations to my godbrother Chiru Prabhu, who was building the temple in Salt Lake City, Utah. So I mean, that's overflowing. You know, and you see that. I went to a Mormon service once, not because I had any ideas of leaving the Hare Krishna movement, but had I had any ideas, I would have left after to go to their service, because I was received so nicely that I could say I was never received as nicely in any Hare Krishna temple, because they didn't bathe my feet or do arti. But, you know, they said, welcome, what's your name? Oh, Swami. Welcome, Swami. Come, and they, you know, The man embraced me, not the woman, of course. And they embraced me. He says, Swami, oh, how are you doing? I want you to meet him. Wow, thank you for coming. I mean, how many times have people come to our temple and we say, thank you for coming? How many times do we say that? We just say, why are you here? Why are you here? You know, there's no prasadam today. You know, come back tomorrow. That's why Prabhupada said there has to be at least like 21 place prasadam.
You came too late.
The curtains are closed, you know.
In front of some old Indian lady walking to the temple to have a darshan, and then they just, oops.
Yeah. You know, I arrange for curtains to be open, and, you know, if someone comes at a different time, even if the deities are sleeping. Don't tell that to Nishina Kavacha. He's not here, is he?
No.
Oh, my God. No, I never do that. I would never do that. It's a great effect. Oh, my God. Now I got in trouble. So I went to this, and I just felt, wow, so much loved. I said, wow. I mean, of course, I learned that we have to do that in our Krishna Consciousness Movement. You know, someone comes, we give them prasadam, instead of just telling them they're going to hell, like was my experience when I first joined. I told the story the other day in class that when I first walked into Hare Krishna Temple, went to the first class, they told me I better join or I was going to be as short as a dwarf living underground, eating human flesh. You know, Kali Yuga, you know, it's time to surrender. So I ran out of there as fast as my little legs could carry me. And for the next 2 years, I avoided devotees until I met Prabhupada. And when I met Prabhupada, of course, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. So I think, you know, that would please Prabhupada very much, you know, these loving exchanges towards everyone. And when you're preaching, I mean, I could see that today. I was with Parama Karuna, and we were doing this walk, and he would meet people, and he had so much love for everybody. You know, this is like a Sankirtan devotee, and also Rupa's the same way, isn't it? When he meets someone, Krishna Rupa told me that, isn't it? They just start having loving exchange with them. You know, not he preached to them, he didn't preach to them, heavy, you demons, why are you just wasting your human form of life, you know, walking up this stupid hill? So that's not what he said. You know, he just had some exchange with them. And I could see he had, because he goes out and preaches a lot, that he just had some love for these people. Whereas me, I was just thinking of how my knees ached. Mm-hmm. And you were walking down the hill, I was thinking of avoiding all the slippery rocks, and he was thinking how nice these people are. So that's the heart of a Vaishnava. You know, he showed that to me today. I was embarrassed, but he showed it to me. And so that's how we should be. And that will please Prabhupada very greatly, if we can be like that. And not that everybody has to go out and distribute books, but, you know, whoever we meet, you know. And, of course, Lord Chaitanya said that whoever you meet, Yari Dekatarika Krishna Upadesh, Margari Guru Hori Tori Desh, whoever you meet, just give them Krishna in some way. Even if they just appreciate a devotee, they make spiritual advancement. Then even if they don't give a donation, take a book or anything, they just say, oh, how nice that person was. So that's our business. Yeah, Rupa.
Can you imagine a valid point that like Prabhupada wants us all to go out and preach in different ways, but we get so caught up in
our own family life
or working, making money, or, you know, like so many services.
Yeah.
But we all need to get out and preach, and we all can to certain degrees, to different levels. But it's very difficult. I think a lot of devotees, they face the barrier that is very difficult, especially like book distribution going out there. People are so averse, and they're so offensive, and they're so not respectful at all. And it's really tough on your false ego. But it's purifying at the same time, because it's so tough. It's very purifying, very humbling. But I think that's what a lot of devotees, they face that challenge, that people are so averse out there. It's like difficult to surrender. You really got to push yourself. Or you got to have other devotees pushing you to get out there. Like every day I face I'm not going to push myself to just to go out every day and face the difficult people out there, you know. And I know Krishna Rupa, she always used to push me to like do books in different places that maybe I normally, ordinarily I wouldn't do, like, you know, in airports or...
That's a good wife.
Or like at gas stations, you know. And, but you know, when you just spontaneously you just surrender and think, yeah, just do books anyway, you know, when you, while you're waiting for the plane at the airport or while you're filling up with petrol, Krishna really reciprocates and sends people along. But I think that, yeah, the devotees really face that challenge that it's really hard for them to be motivated to go out and face people out there because it's...
Can I make a comment there, Rupa?
Yeah.
One devotee who won't be named said to me in this yatra, and I respect it, that he said, I just don't feel that I can go out. I'm not in that mood. It's not like he doesn't understand the mood of the mission, but he can't go out to be preachy.
Yeah.
He can't, he says, I can't put myself in that preachy area, space. Hasn't got the confidence. He's certainly got the knowledge, but he hasn't got the confidence to go into that. Here you are, and then you get people on the platform of trying to appreciate something spiritual, and they're focused on the material, and he can't put himself in that space. So maybe you can make a comment, Maharaj, about Rupa's question and that comment. I mean, you know, right, you've got to respect the individual devotee.
Yeah, you have to respect, but there's some way they can assist. You know, whether they're cooking prasadam, that's also preaching. I don't think we should just, or sharing Krishna consciousness rather than using the word preaching. I don't think we should just confine it to just going out and just stopping people cold on the street. I mean, it takes a special hero like Rupa to do that, and yourself to do that. But, though, you know, like an army, those who support, the troops that support are also part of the endeavor. Like Prabhupada gave the example of the Indian railway system. And he said their motto was to keep the wheels turning. So, you know, many people, for a variety of reasons, are not going to do that. But there's a special taste when you do that in the front line. I mean, I remember when I first joined the movement, I didn't know that they were going to force me to go out. What happened is the temple president, who was Sri Dhananamaraj, who was married at that time, he got me to move in. Of course, it was Prabhupada who got me to move in, but he got me enthusiastic by saying I could be the temple treasurer. So I thought, well, this is great. You know, I could just sit and count the money. So the temple treasury had a total of $5 in it. So it wasn't much bookkeeping to be done. So, you know, so I went in, I counted, and he said, all right, finished. Now you have to go out and sankirtan. So the first day, you know, I was there in a dhoti, out there on sankirtan, and it was difficult, and for a variety of reasons. One is that my own personality, and I know some of you will find this hard to believe, but my own personality is before I joined the movement, I was extremely shy. And that was good, because that protected me in many ways, you know, from illicit life, which I really didn't have before I joined the movement. And Krishna arranged many different things. I told you the story today that, you know, going up the hill, I was like ecstasy, but coming down, you know, I have this problem sometimes with balance. So Krishna arranged that. You know, from the time I was young, I was like that. It's not just, you know, a symptom of old age. Of course, I didn't fall down going down the hill. Krishna Rupa did. She tripped and fell down. But Krishna arranged so that when my mother tried to engage me in social life, like dancing, because I have this this coordination problem, then I simply ended up stepping on the toes of the girls that I was dancing with. And so I wasn't a very popular boy. Yeah, I couldn't even go to my senior prom, you know, because everyone, they looked at me and they ran the other direction, you know. Because at that time, social life meant dancing. You know, my old type of dancing, you know, like whatever, you know, foxtrot or whatever people did in those days, or your Brazilian dancing or something like that. So, you know, Krishna protected me. So also with the shyness, the similar thing, Krishna protected me. You know, I was extremely shy. So, you know, you can imagine the scenario. Here's this extremely shy guy going out, and here he is in a dhoti, you know, in the middle of the street. You know, I would have trouble wearing plain clothes in those days, in the middle of the street wearing a dress. and with a bunch of back to Godheads, and you had to stop people and distribute back to Godheads. So, you know, first I thought, well, let me approach people who are going to be easier. So in America, the easiest people to distribute to are the old black ladies on the street, because they're very sympathetic. You know, you just say, oh, the Lord, praise the Lord, or something like that, and they stop, and they say, oh, son, praise the Lord. And you just say, you can also say, oh, sister, you know, you go there, oh, brother and sister. So I started doing that and had some success, and gradually I got a little more bold. You know, and then other things happened too. Like I was in the movement like 4 months, and I was asked to give the Sunday feast lecture. In those days, you know, you could move up the ladder, corporate ladder, very quickly. Nowadays, you can be in the movement 40 years and not be asked to give any lectures. So, but four months, you know, it was Seth Rootmars, who was a householder at that time. All these devotees were householders at that time. He said, Pure Krishna, you're giving a Sunday feast lecture. 4 months in the movement. And so, because I was initiated early too. That's another story. Because I had actually asked Prabhupada for initiation when I was 2 weeks in the movement. And the temple president almost killed me for going over his head. But anyway. So then I gave the lecture and to a packed crowd for a Sunday feast. And I remember the lecture right now was based on the use of Upanishad, how we have imperfect senses and tendency to cheat and all those other things like that. And then, gradually, you know, I guess my mentality changed. And nobody's ever accused me of being shy now. I mean, I don't think that's... They've accused me of a lot of things, but not that. So actually by this preaching... And for years I did book distribution too. I mean, I was at on one of the first traveling Sankirtan parties in the United States.
The Radha Damodar?
No, that was way before the Radha Damodar. There was a... the first party was Keshava's party out of San Francisco. And so we had, in 1972, we started a complementary party, or let's say a competitive party, out of Dallas, Texas. Because I was in Dallas, Texas, helping start the school there. Oh, it's an interesting story, I should tell anyway. So what happened is that they made me a teacher. I was like 20 years old, had no experience with children before, but I thought they were cute. So so they made me the second teacher in ISKCON, the second male teacher in ISKCON. So I had five kids to take care of, 5 years old. His parents had just stopped, dropped them off to school, driven 1,000 kilometers away. And kids that were crying and everything like that, had them 24/7. And you can imagine, you know, a 20-year-old boy taking care of, you know, five crying kids. And, you know, I didn't abuse them, they abused me. But, and, you know, when I speak to them today, they say they had a good experience. You know, because it was fun. You know, I used to fall asleep while I was giving class, that they had to come and shake me. I was giving a class and they go, and then they go, teacher, wake up. So anyway, so after like 5-6 months of that, I heard about Sankirtan. I, you know, practically anything would sound good after 5 or 6 months of that. You know, nobody helped me. None of the other devotees would take the kids, you know, for like 2 hours or something like that to spell me. So this was 24 hours a day. And then because they didn't have their parents, they were waking up in the middle of the night, crying, passing in the middle of the night. It was intense. So then I heard about Sankirtan, and I said to Seth Rupa at that point that I'd like to go on Sankirtan. You know, traveling Sankirtan. And so we started the second traveling Sankirtan party in 1972. This is way before Radha Damodar. Radha Damodar was much later. As in the United States. And so we went traveling in a van and basically slept in the van, didn't go to hotels because we had no money at that time anyway. and lived very austerely. But it was one of some of the most ecstatic times in my Krishna consciousness. We would start distributing books at about 8 o'clock in the morning and finish at about 8 o'clock at night. 12 hours of book distribution. But by the time we got back, and this was door-to-door primarily at that time, door-to-door book distribution, primarily Krishna books. That was the only big book that was present that we had in ISKCON. We had the old Bhagavad Gita, which is like, very abridged version of the Bhagavad Gita. So we go door-to-door, and, maybe I distribute 20 big Krishna books a day, which in those days was, that's good. I mean, nowadays you've got devotees who can distribute 500 big books in a day. But anyway, so we come back in the evening, and we were so blissed out, for lack of a better word, that we couldn't sleep. It was just like, wow. And we could basically feel Krishna's presence and feel Prabhupada's presence. And when we put on a tape, because in those days they used tapes, when we put on a tape of Prabhupada chanting, you can actually experience Prabhupada's symptoms of ecstasy. I mean, as Aldous Huxley said, the doors of perception became opened. I don't know if anyone's read Aldous Huxley, but anyway. You have. But it was like opening the doors of perception, like the eyes, just like the eyes and the ears, and everything became like crystal clear in dealing with the spiritual. And, we read Krishna book at night, and we read, of course, in the morning. So that was my experience of the most intense, nectarian Krishna consciousness during those early days. Hey, there's our glass man, Sweta. That's the latest style. I still have the old style glasses. I don't keep up with the styles. So anyway, that was my experience in book distribution. And another experience we have recently is that one of my godbrothers, Vaisheshika, who some of you may know, has come to many temples in North America, and he's started this program called the Weekend Warrior Program. You've heard about that before? That means once a month, he gets the whole congregation out distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, and they have it as a festival. It's not as challenging as what you're doing. Sometimes they set up tables, they go with two people together to each person's house, so it's not like as intense as going alone and doing something. Mm-hmm. And one Saturday, we had like 95 people going on book distribution. All congregation. Not a single temple devotee, because we were all back cooking or something like that, was going on book distribution. And guess what happened after that point? The numbers of devotees increased exponentially. Not only people reading the books, but the congregation who started to distribute books, they got more and more realizations, and they became more serious about Krishna consciousness, took initiate. We got a lot of devotees initiated there. I mean, we have so many people in our congregation, I don't know. When Janmashtami came, and people were coming to me and saying, I'm Krishna Das, I'm Balaram Prabhu, whatever. And I hadn't met them. We have so many devotees in the congregation that it just was amazing. And they're running Janmashtami. We had, some people say we had 10,000 people for Janmashtami, and I didn't do anything. I just sat back and the congregation just took over. They did everything. And that was from the book distribution. So, that's some of the glories of book distribution. However, there's other ways of preaching. You can support those who are preaching, distribute prasadam, like you have a very wonderful program for distributing prasadam here, isn't it? And making money for the farm. And it's prasadam. Or restaurants. You have restaurants here. This is all sharing Krishna consciousness. Like one of the other projects we're doing right now is a juice bar. Prasadam juice. Because it's very popular, even here in Australia. Actually, the popularity of juicing was started in Australia. There's this movie, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Some of you may have heard about. It's gone all over the world. And, there's just because of that, there's been people buying juicers. So we're using that to preach Krishna consciousness. So someone will come in and order a, juice me up love cocktail or something like that. We have different names for to attract the university students. This will make your your girlfriend love you. So anyway, you got to advertise like that, you know. So anyway, so they'll take it and they'll be taking prasadam and they'll become Krishna conscious.
That's so, Chapel Hill, is it?
Chapel Hill, yeah. So there's many things we can do. You know, you just use your imagination, internet, you know, prasadam distribution, you know, Harinam, and even the deity worship. There's in Shunya Kavasya. The deity worship, we want people to come see the deities. You know, if you dress the deities nicely, the whole purpose is for people to come see the deities. That's why the devotees should, this is also an advertisement from Shunya Kavacha, they should concentrate on the deity worship at the temple. Because the temple deities are preaching deities. Just like here, your deities are so beautiful. I mean, I was just like overwhelmed when I came to the temple yesterday and I saw the deities. I'm not referring to, also Kishori's apartment, you know, anyway. I don't want to offend her. But I mean, just coming to the temple, New Govardhan is just like, wow. You know, Krishna, Balaram. And it's like, wow. I mean, I'm just thinking, wow. And, you know, the devotees should be thinking, how can we get more outfits made for the deities? You know, Shunya Kavacha was talking about how there's a scarcity of outfits for the deities. So when you see them, wow. After the wow factor, it should be, what can I do? How can I serve? How can I serve them? So they're also preaching. Deities are ISKCON deities are meant for preaching. That's why the devotees, you know, the householders, are meant to serve the ISKCON deity. The deity worship is specifically more for the householders than any other ashram. I mean, of course, I have my shilas, but primarily, Prabhupada said it's for the householders who, yeah, they should all be striving to serve the temple deities, striving to make new outfits. And everything like that. I mean, we have, in our congregation, we have like so many outfits every year that during Janmashtami we have to start to auction off the outfits because we have so many outfits. So, anyway, what do you think, Shri Kavacha? Is that all right? Yeah, he's my old buddy. So, any other questions? Or should we take prasadam now? Prasadam, okay. Everybody is sleepy? They're sleepy? Parma's not sleepy.
I feel
fine. He's feel fine. We feel invigorated. We went to where the chain starts, and it was raining, and it was dangerous to climb after that.
Very windy,
and there was rain pouring down, so we decided, and also, you know, I just want to be careful. I didn't need to have a helicopter pick me up. Isn't it? So we decided to come down after that. Try again tomorrow. I think I've done enough now. But tomorrow we have to leave, so we have a good excuse.